episode number 42 is on the air and in your ear. We Talk Comics from the We Talk Podcast family is back. And this is episode number 42. As I said, this one will be known as San Diego Scoops. And the reason for that is because our own embedded reporter, Cub Reporter K, is back this time. Mind you, we don't have Brett. We are a B-minus. We are lacking our vitamin B, whatever you want to say, whatever I used when we didn't have Chris around and I could use it for C. I'll just repeat. But really, I'm going to get around to the other two guys who are on the show with me. So number one, first off, we are going to go to Keith. And Keith, he's going to introduce himself by telling us what he thinks is the best thing about the fact that Brett isn't here.
Well, I think that whether I agree with Mo or not on a lot of things, he cares. And what I know about Brett, he does not care. I don't know how many reviews I've heard that have ended with, I just don't care. So we got three guys this week that care.
All right. And Chris, what do you think is the best part? Introduce yourself. And what do you think is the best part of not having Brett here?
I'm Chris. ChrisWeTalkPodcast.com. The best thing about Brett not being here is that I stand a decent chance of not being outvoted on stuff.
A decent chance.
A decent chance.
That's true. That's true.
Brett throw me under the truck every time.
I feel like I'm always the one.
Last week, that Space Punisher fiasco, I know Keith would have been on my side. But no, he was nowhere to be seen. He was off rubbing shoulders with Mucky Mucks, the bastard.
Keith will maybe give us a little bit more information on his thoughts on Space Punisher. Who knows? We'll see how this one goes. It's going to be kind of a loose format. I mean, for me, the best part about not having Brett here is less Brett means more me, Mo, the Crown Prince of Charisma. And that's a good thing. Anyways, enough about Brett. Let's talk about me. What do you guys think about me?
You're just going to edit in what you're going to pick and choose words from other episodes to cobble together. Mo is the greatest that's ever been.
Pretty much. I should be doing that anyways, except for I'm lazy. Anyways, let's actually get to the real stuff. This week we're going to get to, I think the news will be the majority of the show here. Of course, we do have some Wii views coming up, and we'll see what else we have time for. But we're going to get to the news. Now, of course, you guys know the news is sponsored by our fine sponsor, Comicosity. Comicosity, the best website. I'm not saying there isn't other websites on the internet where you can get previews, where you can get reviews, where you can get special articles, where you can get interviews, where you can get all this stuff. There is other ones. But this is the best one. Absolutely. And we are so glad that they are our sponsor. Don't be a geek. Visit Comicosity and proudly be a comic book geek. I myself visited on average, about 200,000 times a day. Keith?
I'll say, Mo, that I was at San Diego, and I was going to Comicosity to find out what was going on at San Diego.
There you go. The best. The best. All right, so let's get to the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, I'm back. I did go to San Diego Comic Con. I did check off number 3 on my bucket list and actually attend San Diego Comic Con for the first time. And I got to meet Paul O'Connor, Longbox Graveyard, in person.
I just got to jump in. I don't personally have a bucket list. I have another list that rhymes with bucket, though. I haven't scratched off any of them.
I got a list of stuff to do between naps.
All right. So you got to meet Paul. How was that?
I did. That was great. It was a fun – that was my first panel. That was on Thursday. Thursday afternoon, I got to meet Paul. I got my photo taken with Paul on the stage with the big Comic-Con banner behind me. Met some other folks. Gerald Jones was in the audience, which was really cool. He just turned up because he had heard about it. And great panel. I'm sure Paul will have some more stories about it. And I got a signed copy of the Freaks hologram cover. Never circulated. It was a retailer incentive that was never put out. And Scott, the founder of Malibu, brought that with him and was signing copies in the hallway after the panel. So it was a really good time.
Go ahead, Chris.
Any interesting stories that somehow we missed with our interview with the guys from Malibu?
certainly covered some of the same ground, but those few stories, the early days story about the squirrel, I think would be one of the funniest. That they had piles of original art that were in a warehouse, and animals would sometimes get in. And they had a squirrel get into a box full of original art back in the days before scanners. So if that original art got damaged, then there was no backup copy. So trying to get original art back from a squirrel.
Excellent. Yeah,
Jack, you thought Jack Kirby had trouble with getting his original art.
I thought Raccoon wasn't based on fact.
Yeah, and to think all those years in school I used the excuse my dog ate it. What a waste. Did you get a chance at all to speak with Chris Ulm or Dave Ulbrich and mention you were one of the guys who interviewed them?
Absolutely. I actually found Dave at the DC booth a couple hours earlier. I recognized him from the photos we had on our website for the podcast. And went over and introduced myself. He was very happy to meet me and introduced me to Tom Mason, who was mentioned previously, was a member of the panel, the marketing director of Malibu. And also introduced me to Bobby Chase, who's an editor at DC, which was kind of cool. I was so overcome by meeting Dave Ulbrich that I actually forgot to ask Bobby Chase anything.
Very cool.
But that was kind of neat that, just got introduced around and had a nice chat with Dave, ran into him a couple of times. He was there for the whole weekend. Usually at the DC booth I ran into him.
And now you can also give us the scoop. This is the biggest scoop probably you have coming out of San Diego. How much time one-on-one did you spend now with Paul O'Connor, a.k.a. Lombok's Graveyard?
I'd say about 15 or 20 minutes before the panel, then half hour after.
Half hour after. So now that you have one-on-one in person, asshole, yes or no?
Paul is a great guy. He's very grumbly.
All right.
He's.
I owe Chris $10.
He actually looks a lot like you, Mark.
Does he?
Yeah.
So he's handsome.
That's right. He's taller and not quite as many donuts, but actually the resemblance is quite strong.
Yeah. No, I love donuts.
Hey, anyone who thinks as highly of Forrest Ackerman as he does is okay in my book. He's got a free pass. He could defecate on Mo. He's still cool in my book. Maybe even cooler.
Yeah,
that's the video.
How much that would charge?
That's the video podcast right there.
There you go. So, anyways, no, I know Paul's a great guy, and his latest show that just went up this last week, the Ritual, it was called Lombok's podcast, or Lombok's Graveyard podcast show number 2, The Ritual, coming out of San Diego is great once again. So, I highly recommend everybody who's listening to this go check that out as well. Anyways, Keith, what else you got there?
Well, certainly a busy week coming out of San Diego. A lot of different stories and some stories in odd places. I'm going to start with probably the strangest story that's come up the past few days. Rush Limbaugh claims that Dark Knight Rises is an allegory against Mitt Romney. His evidence is that the villain of Dark Knight Rises is Bane. B-A-N-E. And one of the controversies with Mitt Romney right now is his involvement in the venture capital firm Bain, B-I-I-N. That's the entirety of his evidence, by the way.
I already said he's an asshole. I don't know what else we need. I knew that before he said something stupid. Well, something stupid again. Oh.
This time stupid about comics.
This time stupid about comics. Yes. So this character created 20 years ago is an allegory for this thing that's happening after they started making the movie? Yeah. Moron.
Chuck Dixon, lifelong conservative, was also shocked to find this out. Chuck Dixon, who co-created Bane, and is apparently, as I've been saying, been drawn into the vast left-wing time-traveling conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, no, you know what? They control the media, the left wing.
That's right.
It's possible. Yeah.
They've convinced me that
I'm still listening to that idiot Rush Limbaugh.
Apparently enough to make recordings of the show.
As long as Fox News exists, and I use news in the loosest possible terms, Rush Limbaugh will have a place to spew his sewage.
He's not on Fox. He's not on Fox News.
No,
Bill O'Reilly. who's at least a good broadcaster.
We wouldn't hear anything Rush Limbaugh says if it wasn't repeated on Fox News.
Well, you hear it on The Daily Show. I mean, The Daily Show is essentially a clip show of crazy things they said on conservative media. It's kind of why I gave The Daily Show up, is because I found that so much of the show was just cobbled together from crazy things that were said today.
Well, exactly. You know what? And with Rush Limbaugh, that's plenty of them. It's not the politics, it's the asshole level that offends me. Anyways, I can't say the word asshole one more time. I'm only allowed to say it 5 times in the podcast. Talk about Rush Limbaugh, I've already said it 4. So, come on, let's move on to another subject before I drop another one.
We can tell that Brett isn't on this episode. All right.
Brett doesn't like Rush Limbaugh either.
I'm going to mix up large and small stories. So, Valiant, in October, solicited Bloodshot Hardcover Volume 1. They're beginning reprints of the 1990s, 80s and 90s Valiant comics. This will have a Barry Windsor Smith cover. And if you didn't hear the titles of the upcoming Marvel movies were announced at San Diego, Thor will be called The Dark World. And Captain America 2 will be called Winter Soldier. And Guardians of the Galaxy was made official for August of 2014.
Interesting.
There was a piece of production art that was put out to promote Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't actually know any of the characters on the image besides Rocket Raccoon. So if any of our Twitter followers want to tip us off.
You actually probably know them all. It's just there's this thing called a reboot happening. So they've all been redesigned, I'm guessing, because it's not a relaunch.
No, it isn't a reboot. It is a relaunch.
Oh, I'm sorry. What the hell? I get them confused.
And here's a little inside scoop. Kurt Busiek, as of today, is writing more Astro City stories.
Nice.
He is going back in and is starting a new ongoing Astro City. He tweeted midweek that he had some ideas and was going to be going back into that world. And I asked him directly if he was looking at a miniseries, graphic novel, what? And he said it's an ongoing.
I actually don't remember the last thing Kurt Busiek worked on.
Marvel would be the. He was working on some Marvel stuff, work for hire for a while, because it's been quite a while since it was Astro City stuff.
Yeah, no, after I read most of Astro City, and then he sort of fell off the radar.
You know what? That's odd. I feel like he has been active, and yet for the life of me, I can't think of what his most recent work is. That's strange.
Well, we'll do some research and come back to that on another podcast.
Or on this one. I'm not really listening to Keith anyways. I never do.
Whatever happened to Kurt Busiek? Dan DiDio.
Well, he got into arguments with Keith and took Keith to task on Twitter.
He did. He has.
Did you mention that when you met him?
I didn't meet Kurt Busiek. He wasn't at the show.
Oh. Well, that sucks. Good job, Keith, scaring him off.
That's right. That's using my vast access to the left-wing time-traveling conspiracy, I made him sick.
Well, you control the media.
I do. So, Dan DiDio has teased the ending of Justice League International. In the annual, he says that one character refuses to rejoin, one quits, two go home, two go to hospital, one blinks away, and one disappears. So I'm very curious to see what happens to my booster in this final issue of Justice League, the annual written by Geoff Johns.
Didn't that exact lineup happen to Primal Force? Just
I don't know. You made it to the end of Primal Force?
I did, but I got a strong constitution.
I'm sorry, guys.
All right, now some loose bits. Walking Dead has sold out its first print at 383,000 copies and has gone to a second print. This makes it the most successful comic, highest first print run since the Barack Obama Amazing Spider-Man issue.
Now imagine if that was an independent book, how impressive that would be.
Ah, yes. The big discussion, is Walking Dead an independent comic?
Nope.
Yeah. What criteria would you say no on that one?
Well, as I put on, and this was a Nerdy Bird, her website, where this debate was having, what I said was that it's not an independent book because true independent books have to fight a certain public perception that to have their product seen. Essentially, that's what I believe. I don't believe anything published through Image. I think if you're simply by being published through Image, just from being able to advertise within your own books, within books like Walking Dead and the back of that book that have such a high print run, that anything within that or their social media and their presence on that, just because of the size of the publisher, anything published through that is not small print to me. It doesn't matter if it's – there's a difference between creator-owned and small press, and small print and independent. And I don't think it is because I would say, again, that if you're with Image, when a retailer is done with DC and Marvel, that's the third thing they're going to. If you're an independent book, you are fighting to have those guys find you. And that's the difference between being an independent book and a book that may not be mainstream – but certainly is not small press and published through Image. Does that make sense?
Not really. I think you're using the words small press and independent interchangeably. And I'd agree that it's not small press. But it's creator-owned. There's no corporate money. There's no advance money. You don't get paid until the comic comes out and the comic sells. There's no corporate control. It's creator-owned. It's creator-controlled. There's no editorial. So in what way is he not an independent creator?
Because as soon as somebody walks past, who's a casual comic book fan, walks past and sees Image label on a book, they have name recognition with the brand and a propensity to give it a shot that a true independent book doesn't have.
But why is an Image book that sells 3,000 not independent, and Strangers in Paradise or Rachel Rising that sells 5,000 copies is? Like it,
because
your definition is purely based on they're too successful as a company.
No, I didn't say it's because they're too successful. Their brand recognition is too high. There's a difference. There's a difference between too successful and brand recognition. How many Image books truly sell 3,000 compared to 5,000 of these other ones? Do you know?
No, but most of the Image books are, 20,000 or less.
Mm-hmm. I would say to you that regardless of the popularity of a book like Strangers in Paradise, it never had the potential to reach the sales of what Walking Dead did with Image. I would propose that to you.
I would disagree with that. If the Strangers in Paradise television show did indeed happen, I think it would be a fair comparison.
Evidence shows otherwise, Chris.
But take Walking Dead out of the analogy. Is Green Wake not an independent comic?
No. No, it isn't. It's not a mainstream comic, but it's not an independent comic, no. It's from Image. Again, there may be a difference between independent and small press. Perhaps it's a small press book. Maybe you could say small press is Image. I don't think so.
No, but I would say that Image isn't small press, but I would say it's independent.
No, I would disagree. I would say Green Wake is not an independent book.
To me, there's no editorial.
Green Wake still, regardless, has the publishing arm, the advertising arm, and the media arm available to it. Of something like let me tell you something. If Green Wake, I don't know what it sold. Let's say 5,000 copies on issue number one. If that was independent, it would have sold 500, and that's the difference.
All right, we're going to get into this with Mulvey and Tyler, who know independent more than either of us is going to claim, but we'll argue with them anyway.
Oh, absolutely! I love a good debate, even when Keith is wrong, just all the time.
I kind of wish I had an opinion on that one.
Chris, I was taking a drink there. That almost ended up on my computer, you bastard.
All right, well, let's do some San Diego bits. This is an adjunct to the, and that's the news, and then we'll go right into the adjunct.
All right, let's get to the scoops then.
All right, Tim Drake was never Robin.
What?
Tim Drake in the Zero issue. Tim Drake's story will be essentially the same in the Zero month. However, to streamline the four Robins in 5 years that has been a complaint since the relaunch of the New 52, Tim Drake was never called just Robin. He was Red Robin from the start.
That doesn't change anything. That doesn't change the fact that all this has happened within such a short period of time. It just changes the name of a character. That's useless.
No. Let's not throw this away. Taking out 5-6 years of Chuck Dixon stories from Batman continuity could actually help.
His Robin miniseries that he wrote were good.
The miniseries, great character. The miniseries, I would agree.
When the Tim Drake character was introduced, those miniseries were good.
I would agree on the miniseries. One of the big controversies at San Diego, the rumor and then confirmed finally on the weekend that through some corporate decision, somewhere along the way, Stephanie Brown, will not be Nightwing in the Smallville Season 11 comic book. This has been, Steph Brown is one of the missing characters after the relaunch, has no place currently, and Brian Q. Miller, who had written Batgirl, the Steph Brown Batgirl comic, is writing Smallville Season 11, and it was announced a couple of months ago that he would be bringing in Steph as a version of Nightwing, as Batman's partner when Batman is introduced into Smallville Season 11. Someone has kiboshed that, and it will be Barbara Gordon.
Smallville's just, with its characters, just gotten out of control anyways, hasn't it?
Well, it's odd to make this decision. I mean, certainly the Green Arrow that's in Smallville Season 11 doesn't have any bearing on the Arrow TV series or the comics that are coming out in New 52. None of the other characters have any relationship. So we haven't heard an official reason why, other than they don't want to promote a character they're not using somewhere else.
I think there's another way to look at this, though. When it was announced that she was going to be the new Nightwing, my Twitter blew up. This character has some sort of weird-ass following. I never enjoyed the spoiler all that much, and her run of Batgirl I thought was rather pathetic, but that's my opinion of it. This character has a fan base. I'd actually say that once Marvel saw the reaction that this
Marvel?
Character was... Sorry?
DC.
Did I say Marvel? DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
DC saw that this character had fans, I wouldn't be surprised. They just didn't want to muddy the brand by making her Nightwing as well as a Bat character. I wouldn't be surprised if we see her in the next couple months.
We do keep hearing from Scott Snyder that he likes the characters. He'd like to reintroduce them. Steph and Cass Kane, Cassandra Kane is the other character that has gone walkabout during New 52. No one seems to be able to get anything happening with these characters to bring them back in. I mean, you bring him back in and you're left with, making that 5-year problem even worse, though. This is part of the issue.
Why don't they just make him like Red Wing instead of, that'll fix everything. Stupid.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how having a Nightwing, female Nightwing that gets called Steph in two panels would have actually solved these problems, but I know people have been desperate in the same way that, come October, I will be desperate to see Booster somewhere.
Don't you think there's a good chance Booster will take a little while off? Because, I mean, he had a series. Essentially, he was the star of the series, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It was a team book, but he was the lead character.
Oh, absolutely. And
it wasn't successful. And the way people want to see him is with a character that is out of continuity. That's the way the fan base wants to see him presented. So I'm not sure that there really is a place for him or that he will continue to have much of a... They might try and... He might be relaunched, or if not rebooted. We might see something like that come up here.
Yeah,
Go ahead. As long as we have weird-ass continuity between Earth 2 and the rest of the new 52, Booster will have a place. When there's time travel, when there's dimension popping, he will be there.
Oh, they won't get rid of him. I'm not saying they're going to just boot him to the side. I'm saying that he probably will be, it might be a couple months. It might be 2-3 months. They figure out what to do with him, you know, and try something else because this didn't work.
Yeah, I could see him going on the
show. He had a fair shot. He had a very fair shot.
I'm not sure I agree that he got a fair shot, but he got a shot.
Why wouldn't you say he got a fair shot? I mean, they launched 52. He's a lead character in his own book, essentially. You know, the lead character of a book with Justice League in the title, and they didn't cancel it immediately. It got a good long run. I mean, I don't know how that's not a fair shot.
I would say that that book was hobbled from the beginning, because the book that was being planned was a reunion of the original Justice League International, and which was coming out of Brightest Day. And then once they decided everything else was being so heavily rebooted, that book had to become something different. And I think what I felt I was getting Global Guardians. I didn't think I was getting JLI. So I just picked up the trade of the first arc. I will
Who's
get the trade.
Trader again?
It was written by Dan Jurgens.
There you go.
It's I like it. It's better than Extreme Justice. That's what I will give it.
Faint praise all around.
I have seen darker days for Booster.
All right.
Speaking of canceled books, it was interesting in one of the panels. The new 52 panel, Jim Lee was talking about how a book, how they determine whether a book is going to continue or get canceled or get a creator swap. And they said they actually did come up with a formula. They have, a sheet that they do the math, and it isn't just sales, because it's important to remember Justice League International is actually selling about middle of the pack. And there are books at the bottom end that haven't been canceled over the past, in wave 1, 2, or 3. But what they look at is this book serving a genre, a niche that's not being served elsewhere? Something like a war book, something like All-Star Western, something that's not being put out by Marvel that isn't anywhere else in DC. And that's part of the math. So there's different math than just sales for why a book goes. And in the case of JLI, underperforming is really what they would say. What you said, Mo, it's a book with Justice League in the title that was selling middle of the pack. Justice League is the number one or number two book every month since the relaunch for DC, has been the number one book a couple of months, period. And yet the other one that has Justice League on the title at number 25 or 30 out of the pack.
And I bet you it wasn't number 25 or 30 when it launched. I'm not sure where it was, but I bet you it was somewhat higher. Top 20, I'd be willing to bet. I seem to recall from the sales numbers you threw past us. But really, this was news. Was this at a panel that you were at?
Yeah, that was at the new 52 panel. Yeah, I was.
You were there?
I was at that one, yeah.
See, I already knew that. I didn't think that was big news. I knew a long time ago that DC took a sheet. Bada boom! Rim shot, folks.
Bada bum.
Chris, you got something there.
Not really. I always thought their formula involved Liefeld in some way.
Well, there's a lot of pieces. I mean, there's cost of the book, but there is, there is things like, is Hawk and Dove ever going to be a top 10 book? Then it's fine to be a bottom 10 book. As long as it's not number 52 of 52. But is it serving something else? Like, is it something like Earth 2 that's a self-contained superhero book? Is it something like, Men of War? They got rid of one war book and replaced it with a war book. So clearly they still want to make sure that they're serving that subgenre.
I would love to know. I am curious as to what you say that JLA or Justice League, I guess it's Justice League now, isn't it? It's not JLA. Old habits die hard. Justice League, it's number one or number two for them or overall?
For DC, but it's top five. It's been top five since the relaunch. Right now AVX is the top two books.
Yeah, so I'm curious as to what its sales are compared to say, month 3. Where can we look these up?
You want to stop recording while we look these up?
No. You tell me where to look them up, and I'll tell you. By the way, Kurt Busiek was writing Trinity 52 issues of that for DC with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman most recently, which was really good. I can't believe I forgot it.
That's been like 5 years since that came out, though?
Well, let me see. What are we talking about? December? No, it was more recent than that. It was more recent than that.
I read it, but I got a firm policy. Any book with both Superman and Batman should be titled Justice League or World's Finest. Without those two titles, we'll not read them.
So, Mo, Justice League number 3 sold 158,000, and Justice League number 10 sold 127,000.
Oh, that's pretty strong. That's pretty strong. That's holding pretty damn good, especially with the competition Marvel's put out there.
Yeah, so right now, the last couple of months, Batman has pulled ahead of Justice League, but it's Justice League has been a top five book since the big launch.
Well, they had the first crossover within the company. I'm sure that has something to do with it as well.
Yes.
As well as good general buzz.
Yeah, certainly Night of the Owls has pushed ahead. Justice League has fairly bad buzz in general. I mean, there are still people that like it, but increasingly I'm seeing people who are not digging it. But
it's the type of book where even if it's not good, people are willing to give it a longer shot than something like Justice League International, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. What else you got?
All right. Well, I went to the Joe Straczynski spotlight, where he announced his new intellectual properties creation company, which is called Studio JMS. I've now blanked on what it's called. Club JMS is what one of the people in the audience called it. I know it's not that. It's basically what he's done is at the tag that was on his press release is, I want comics that become TV shows that become movies, and movies that become comic books. What he will be doing is launching, he has a movie in development that will start filming early next year. He has a web series, he has TV shows, and he'll be launching three comic books through Image.
And we can't get a Babylon 5? Come on!
He was asked about Babylon 5 at the...
Of course he is. There are people following him around 24-7 going, B5, come on!
What he said was, there's something being worked on for Babylon 5, but every time he has made an announcement about Babylon 5, he has been Charlie Brown and Lucy has pulled the football away. So he's refusing to say anything until something's on paper. He said there's something, but he's been saying there's something for quite a while.
Studio JMS.
Studio JMS.
That is what it's called. You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Now, Chris, I know you'll enjoy this little anecdote. JMS was asked about being a writer, about how starting out as a writer. And he said that back in the day, he phoned Harlan Ellison, because Harlan Ellison's phone number was in the phone book. And
from hereafter known as God.
So he phones up Harlan Ellison and says, my stuff's not selling. What do I do? He does not know Harlan Ellison, just pulled his name out of the phone book. Says, my stuff's not selling. And Harlan Ellison says, it's because your stuff's shit. Stop writing shit. And he said, how do you know that my stuff's no good? And he's like, is anyone buying it? So stop writing shit, and then you could actually sell something. And in hindsight, Joe looked at his stuff and said, yep, he was right.
Beautiful.
Although, even once he started selling, I've seen Masters of the Universe, E-Man and Masters of the Universe, his episodes, not as brilliant as one would like.
How much expectations can you have for a He-Man and the Masters Universe episode?
Now, I know this is actually something that Paul grumbled about, is that that he didn't like something Straczynski had said on Twitter. I'll go one step. There was an article against Before Watchmen that referred to JMS as former writer of He-Man. And I and a lot of others felt that this was really picking something 20 years old just to lower the tenor. It was just really to make him seem less than that. you know, picking out something he had written from 20 years ago as opposed to the bigger work, as opposed to, like, you know, Thor, for example, that came out, the Thor movie that came out last year, because that would sound like a good thing, a good writer to have on one of the Before Watchmen. And Paul was a bit grumbly that JMS had reacted badly to being called writer of He-Man. I will say for Paul, when he listens to this, when the studio JMS promo starts with He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. So there is no distancing, totally owns it. It was the first thing that comes up on screen.
Yeah, but I've also heard several interviews with the Joe, more than I probably should have. He does talk about both He-Man and Captain Power through gritted teeth.
But he will
never refer to his scripts as good. He'll always point out the problems rather than any strengths.
Yeah, but not liking your own early work is very, very different than distancing yourself from it.
If I had Joe's career, I would like to be known as the Babylon 5 guy, not one of the 10 writers on a Filmation series from the 80s.
Yeah, and I think that's really where he's coming from.
Yeah, I get upset too. Whether I like the show or not, I'd like the thing that follows my name, the most popular, or the thing I'm actually known for. Because if Joe had written He-Man in the Masters of the Universe and then did nothing else, we wouldn't be talking about him now. So let's put Babylon 5, let's put Thor, let's put that crappy Clint Eastwood movie behind his name. Let's keep it current. Something that made money.
What crappy Clint Eastwood movie are you talking about?
The Changeling?
Mm-hmm. I still haven't seen it.
Okay. He also wrote an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger. Nice. So
yeah, and Jake and the Fat Man. Let's not...
Oh,
it could
yeah.
be worse, is what I'm saying. Oh, and how can we forget Jace and the Wheeled Warriors? I have no idea what the hell that is, but I want to see it.
Everyone's got to pay the rent sometimes.
Everyone has to pay the rent sometimes. Excellent.
At least
I'm hoping it was cartoons.
That's where I draw the line.
I think we need to do a podcast tracking and finding out whatever happened to all of the rest of the writers on He-Man.
Actually, that would be interesting.
We'll pull the names of all of the writers of He-Man and do a research episode.
My favorite writer of the He-Mans went on to write Friday the 13th, the final chapter, and never worked again.
I just can't believe Chris just said the words, my favorite writer of He-Man.
Well, no, that's my favorite story from the writers of He-Man.
You know he has the box set.
Oh, of course he does. He probably owns
the
three.
I have the four box sets that came out before the current cheap ones.
Yeah.
They've got a kick-ass documentary on Filmation on those.
And how many times have you watched it?
I made it through half a season. Hey, those are huge-ass seasons.
I mean the documentary.
Oh, the documentary. I watched all those. The ones on She-Ra are pretty sparse, though.
There you go. All right, we're getting off topic. It's probably Chris's fault. Keith, keep going, since this is all your fault.
Absolutely. I also, speaking of JLI, I got to meet Dan Juergens at San Diego. Got a Booster Gold sketch. That was the high point, certainly, of my time. Fantastic original sketch.
I thought the Bruce Boxleitner.
Bruce Boxleitner was pretty cool. Yep.
I saw some of your Twitter pics coming out of San Diego, man. Was there anyone you didn't have draw Booster Gold for you?
I got three sketches of Booster Gold, and I got Nicholas Scott to do a sketch of Alan Scott for me as well. I got four sketches done. I can't say enough about the DC Comics booth. It was always packed. It was always hopping. Seemed fun. The Marvel booth seemed like anarchy in a bad way. You couldn't get anywhere close to anything. DC was always fun, and most of the artists were doing free sketches. I got four sketches for $0.
Wow, that's cool.
I can't thank him enough. The other two sketches I got were Art and Franco, who did the Tiny Titans comic and do the Superman Family Adventures right now. And they each did a sketch of Booster Gold for me. So it's kind of cartoony Booster Gold sketches. And Art even drew Skeets in the corner for me. They're awesome.
Nice.
Just put them up, just a new framed collage in my home office here today. Get all those displayed. But I asked Dan Jurgens about the Flight Ring, Legion of Flight Ring. I said that's, you know, when the new 52 was happening, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of chaos as they were redoing things. And I was so glad to see the Legion of Flight Ring, even if it's never explained. I'm actually okay to never see an origin of Booster because I know it risks taking out some of the things I really like about his origin if they actually tell the origin. And Jurgens said it was quite a discussion point about the Legion Flight Ring, that he had to fight for that because New 52 has wanted to dump any time travel elements. So it's, yeah, the bits that could
have... If they do that, according to Chris, there won't be a place for them.
There's no time travel currently. He has been referred to as a time traveler, so that part of his origin is intact. This week's Blue Beetle has Booster Gold in it. He is referred to as a time traveler. But the Flashpoint break wall that was mentioned in the Legion books has stopped time travel, at least for the time being. So whatever Booster's origin is, I'm okay to not see it, actually, because any opening of that origin risks taking out my favorite parts, to be honest. So I'm okay to just leave it be.
Did you say you're mokay to just leave it be?
That's right.
Excellent.
It doesn't sound like me, but it's probably what I said. Another bit of inside information that I got hanging around these booths, I met the Before Watchmen creators and got them all to sign a copy of Silk Spectre. And talking to Len Wein, who I did not ask how to pronounce his name, I was asking him about Crimson Corsair, which he's writing, and they've decided how to collect it, and he said they have not figured that out yet. And I said, well, it'll be, 70 pages when it's done? And he said, it'll actually be more than 70 pages. There will be some 8-page stories in Crimson Corsair. So it'll be a little over 70. So that's a little bit of inside information there that I haven't seen anywhere else. A lot of material from Zero Month, from the various months, from the various panels, particularly the New 52 panel. And I think most of that's been covered, but I'm very, very excited about Zero Month now and how all these books are going to fit together. There's a lot of the bat titles specifically sound like they're going to fill in a lot of gaps and how things work. Particularly Jason Todd and Barbara Gordon are going to get a lot of background rebuilt.
If they can figure out how Tim Drake just being Red Robin fixes everything and fill that in for me in a Zero issue, I'd be happy.
I don't think it's intended to fix everything, but I think it's just a simplicity. I mean, to me,
I know.
To me, it actually makes perfect sense to me, but I know there's, I mean, this was something that caused a freak out again, as the New 52 is wont to do. To me, it actually, on a compressed timeline, it doesn't make a lot of sense for Tim Drake to become Robin immediately after Jason Todd dies.
Here's the thing, there's a saying in, when you're making movies, you make a movie, you don't necessarily get it right, we'll fix it in post. Do you feel like that's what DC's attitude has been towards the New 52?
In a project this size, there's always going to be these little discrepancies.
We'll fix it in post.
You have to do that.
Just get it out there.
Hawkman was screwed up.
I had no problem with that, actually.
Hawkman was screwed up for a decade after Crisis on Infinite Earth. Justice Society was screwed up for closer to 20 years after Crisis.
Hawkman was all... Hawkman didn't stop being screwed up, did it?
They did their best. They tried over and every crossover. They would try
sometimes
to fix.
Sometimes when you try your best, all you do is add on to the continuity and make a bigger mess. Though
Shazam has been messed up since his inclusion into the DC universe.
I don't think so. I think Ordway fixed that. But yeah,
only in the Trials of or the Power of Shazam book.
Yeah, exactly. Like 1994.
Only that one book who never crossed over with any other DC characters.
Yeah, it did. It led to his mini series. It was essentially the Zero issue for the regular series that launched for him that went on for like 50, 60 issues. So.
Yeah, but did anyone? I mean, how often did they tie in with the rest of the DC universe? Is what Chris.
That's what I'm saying.
That series.
I know there was the crossover with Superman later on, but.
Well, no, before that. No, no. And then the Ordway's run definitely was taking part in the regular DC continuity. Without question.
I know it wasn't. I know it wasn't supposed to be an alternate world or anything, but it seemed fairly self-contained, is what I'm saying.
Sort of like Starman felt self-contained when Robinson was writing it. It didn't feel like it crossed over too much. I mean, you'd have crossovers, but
you had crossovers, and you had crossovers.
But the characters would never refer to those crossovers in other books ever.
Who can ever forget the epic Mary Marvel Supergirl crossover written by Peter David?
I forgot about it. I didn't know it existed.
I still have nightmares. Let's see now.
Shit.
I met Scott Lobdell, and I was distinctly not Canadian when I met him. I was right up at the front getting a sketch done by Nicholas Scott, who is incredibly charming, and had a great chat about her too. She actually kept stopping sketching to talk to me about comics because she would get distracted by the conversation, which, you know, it's fun to have talk to someone that's that excited about comics. And Scott Lobdell came up, and I'd recognized him because I'd been to the New 52 panel before that. And he stuck out his hand, and in the second, I did not say hello. I did not introduce myself. I pointed at him and said, "I want you to make me love Superman again." And he said,
"Really?
I'm going to do my best." I'm like, "Thank you." So I got the Canadian at the end, where I said thank you. But I, in hindsight, saying hello probably shouldn't have how I started that.
Serves you right for not wearing your Mountie hat down there.
You should have let him punch you and then said, "I'm sorry."
Ran into your fist there, sorry. All right. And lots of Earth 2 notes. Lots of Earth 2 notes. Probably the biggest news for us, for the Canadians here on We Talk Comics, the Canadian character that will be introduced in number 5 is Wesley Dodds. And he will be the leader of the Sandmen. The Sandmen are an international team, special forces type thing. Their costume has not been finished designing. Nicholas Scott is doing the design. But it will incorporate some sort of gas mask element to it, hearkening to the Golden Age Sandman. And a bit of rumor that they will be introducing Sandy as one of the Sandmen, Sandy Hawkins.
Great. Love that character.
Who was the, I can't recall, in the JSA series just before the New 52, who was it that took up the mantle of, was it Sandy who took up the mantle of Sandman? That, I don't think it actually was Sandman anymore, but what was the name? I can't remember what the name of the character was, but somebody else took up the mantle.
I believe he went by the name Sandy.
Did he?
Yeah.
I can't recall. Was it him? Because he had, yep, like, actual sand powers and everything. Like,
yes.
They did some changes to him. Okay. All right. Just couldn't remember.
The Earth 2-0 issue.
Now, was that character the same Sandy? Sorry, Keith.
Yes.
It was the same guy? Okay.
Yes. His sidekick from the Golden Age grew up, gained powers from fighting some bad guy, spent a couple years dead, and then returned to lead the JSA.
Returned to lead the JSA, okay. Because Wesley Dodds had died, though.
He wasn't dead yet. He was dead for a long time.
Yeah, I know. He was killed fairly shortly before, I believe, the actual 52, I believe, within the last 5-6 years, wasn't he?
Yes, yes. He did die.
Okay, just trying to keep it all straight for myself.
JSA run, I believe he did live for a while.
Okay.
Although I remember that JSA series did begin with a death to unite them, but I forget which character that was.
Okay, Keith, please go ahead.
So the Zero issue of Earth 2 will feature the 8 heroes. It was a team of 8 heroes that were together prior to the invasion by Apocalypse. And these characters will be Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Robin, which is the Huntress now, Supergirl, who is Power Girl now, Terry Sloan, and 2 question marks. So he'll be building some backstory to Earth 2 and how these characters fit together, why Terry Sloan is a bad guy now and was one of the great heroes of the world.
Should be interesting.
And it was confirmed at least one of the panels that the dark side that appeared in Earth 2 and killed the Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman of Earth 2 is the very same dark side who was in the first arc of Justice League. There is only one version of Apocalypse, one version of Darkseid, and he attacked both worlds about 5 years back.
Now, I'm suffering a little bit of a mental gap on this. We haven't seen any of the new gods other than a Darkseid, have we?
No. No, just Darkseid, Steppenwolf, who is trapped on Earth 2. He was trapped on Earth 2 at the end of Issue 1. And then in Issue 2, there's a wanted poster up for him. So it establishes that he at least was left on Earth 2 after the war.
See, it's interesting because the characters, the new god characters, have some popularity and are important to the DC universe, or at least previously, and yet cannot sustain a regular series. Not popular enough to do that. Like, there's a lot of characters like the Metal Man, another one like that, that the DC has. So, I mean, you know, they probably are in a bit of a quandary in how they present them in trying to relaunch them, because you want to make them so this time they can be presented in a way that their series will become popular enough to last, because they deserve that. But in the past, they've been unable to do that. They've given it many tries. Do you disagree with that, Chris?
I've read most of them.
No, you read them all.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for that Kirby art.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though, right, Keith?
I've always liked them as supporting characters, but I've never been interested in them as a self-contained book. I don't know if I don't know if it's the power level, or I just never thought that as characters they were that strong. I mean, I always thought Kirby was great at character design, but Dark Side as a name has always bugged me.
Like Dark Seed more.
Yeah,
for years we were trying to decide if it was Dark Seed or Dark Side. It's like Dark Seed because it sounds cooler.
Yeah, Darkseid just seemed, you know, quite uninspired. So I always thought it was Darkseid, and it wasn't about it meaning something. I mean, lots of names don't mean something.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it actually seemed quite uninspired when I found out that it was actually Darkseid.
But his eye beams, the Omega rays, have to be one of the coolest looking beams in all of comic books.
Like I say, it's not that they aren't cool, and it's not that they aren't important, and it's not that they aren't popular. It's that they're difficult to write and make interesting enough to sustain in an ongoing or even a really good miniseries for the average people.
Reader. I would not disagree with you.
Yeah.
I just like looking at them.
And like I say, there's a lot of characters like that. Marvel has them too, even though no characters, I don't think there's any characters that have retained within the Marvel universe that retain such a such an old school feel as, say, the New Gods or even the Metal Men. I think all the characters have a more modern feel, have always had a more modern feel regardless. So I don't think that there are characters which you go, really popular, not popular enough for a regular ongoing series that they can sustain. Just some characters just never seem to fly that way. Shazam's another one so far, really.
Yeah, it's kind of what Marvel has with the Inhumans and the Eternals. That
exactly.
Yeah, they're well known within comic circles, but they never quite seem to click. They never, you know, they have the odd pretty good run, it just doesn't. I don't know whether it's I kind of think it's the power level. I mean, particularly the New Gods are just so incredibly powerful that, and they all are.
But I can, like I say, I can list a Metal Man, or I can list a character that's, I mean, DC or in Marvel, I can think of a character that's had many, many runs, like a Nova's had many runs, you know? Just doesn't seem to be well suited, and there seems to be no place for him in the end of the day.
And he sucks. I hate Nova. Why the hell why do they bring him back?
Warlock again would be another one. Again, maybe that's the power level of Warlock, but.
Commandy.
I'd like to see a really good Commandy.
I love the concept. Just, it has never quite gelled. I mean, a boy and his dog in a post-apocalyptic future/past, that's just fun.
Kazar is another one, and his shirt certainly isn't his power level.
Yeah, but that's just because they gave him the stupidest place to live on the face of the earth. the Savage Land.
Are you kidding me? Come on.
No, cool. The Savage Land has no place in the Marvel Universe. At least with Warlord, DC made it underground.
I thought the Savage Land was underground.
I do not believe so. I think it's just on the top of the earth.
I think it is just on the top
Planes
of the earth.
Planes could fly over it. There's sky everywhere.
It's like in the Arctic somewhere, I believe.
They're both in the Arctic.
Well, it's in the Antarctic.
Antarctic, yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, I guess I always thought it was underground. Maybe it's not underground.
I don't think so.
No, I don't. Well, now I'm conflicted.
Keith,
you keep on giving on to what other notes you are. I'm looking that shit up right now.
Well, I'm going to have one for you, Mo, here. Because you just said the character. They were asked at the New 52 panel, the different creators, who hasn't been reintroduced that you really want to reintroduce and give a really good revision and make cool again. Scott Snyder said the Riddler, who he's already thinking of ideas for. And Jeff Johns said at this panel and at another panel, Metal Men. And he'll bring them back next year, and he's got ideas for them.
Nice. Let's see if they can do it.
I don't think he's the guy to do that.
Well, I've seen Giffen try. I've seen Jurgens try.
Jurgens made an excellent try.
I like Jurgens run. Yeah, it was only four issues, but it was a really...
Yeah, it was a miniseries. But it was coming off of, though, their appearances in some bigger books to give it a little, you know, cachet and a little momentum going in. It was an excellent run. But again, it's, like I say, some characters are just, you know, just not
I'd
meant
like
to.
see them given to a more indie guy. Curtis Weeb, I believe, mentioned that he loved these characters. I'd love to see that.
Kowalczyk.
Sorry?
I believe that was Scott Kowalczyk.
Scott Kowalczyk. There are several independent type creators. I think Metal Men done by Paul Pope would blow my mind.
I think Kowalczyk would be incredible on the Metal Men. Just incredible. He's too slow to do a monthly. So,
I just think that a more independent feel for such weird characters, going totally mainstream with a regular DC artist or writer, will never work for the Metal Men. The Metal Men were meant to be weird. They were meant to be sort of pathetic. I don't think anyone who writes Superman well will be able to write the Metal Men well.
Now, okay, first off, I'm just going to say the Savage Land is an artificially created tropical forest region nestled amidst a ring of volcanic mountains on the icy continent of Antarctica. So it's not underground. Now, off that, who was it you said again wants to do them and make them cool, Keith? Metal Men?
Jeff Johns.
See, it is an interesting thing because the balance is to respect and uphold what made them great in the first place, but get rid of some of that kind of patheticness. But can you do both at the same time? You know, can you keep what made them unique and original and gave them their quirks and still make them so they're cool? And I'm not sure. That's really, really hard to see. Johns, you know, has successfully done that, and then I hated what he did to Captain Marvel, Shazam. So, we'll see.
I'm going to make a prediction right now that they'll be jerks.
With John's writing them lately, that does seem to be the direction he goes.
That's his go-to for a reboot.
Yeah, it really seems to be. It really does.
Just if they were to streamline the Metal Men, they wouldn't be the Metal Men. They'd be powered metal guys, and I don't need to see
I that. Am worried to see the Metal Men look like something drawn by Liefeld. Created, like rebooted and recreated as something done by Liefeld or Jim Lee or something like that. I that scares the hell out of me.
Well, we shall see. And the last little bit of Earth 2 news, it is a big spoiler actually for Earth 2. So I'm going to say if you don't want a spoiler for Earth 2, jump ahead about 2 minutes in the episode.
Probably longer, but what do I care?
So I asked Nicholas Scott about Dr. Fate, because I know that the second arc of Earth 2 is magic and science. And what he's been playing with is that some of the characters are magical characters getting their powers from magic, such as Green Lantern and Flash. Others will be science characters, such as the Sandman. And I asked about when Fate's going to be introduced. And Nicholas got kind of a strange look, and she said, well, maybe he's already been teased a bit. And I said, is he the crazy guy in the alley in number two? And she was like completely shocked and said, you're the first person to see that.
Well done.
It actually came out of a conversation I had with a couple of friends on Twitter, but I'm the first person to actually say it to her face. So it's a one panel in issue two of Earth Two. So go back and take a look. That is your first look at Earth Two's Dr. Fate, which will likely be the only Dr. Fate in the DC universe. Spoiler ends. And one last little bit. I was at the original graphic novel panel for DC, which had some really cool stuff. They were talking about Gichiro, which is Anthony Bourdain's comic. Just came out. And they also did clarify, because Earth One Batman just came out, the graphic novel. Book two is being worked on. They had art from Superman Earth One Book Two. And confirmed that the Batman and Superman Earth One books do take place in the same universe, and there will be an element of tie-in in the second volume of at least one of those books to confirm that they will be, there'll be articles up by Clark Kent in the Batman book, I believe is how they're going to be tied together. But yes, they are in the same universe. And they'll be working in these books very slowly. They are not interested in adding a lot of layers to this, or tons and tons of variation, though they did hint that Wonder Woman may be the next one we see in the Earth ones.
Now, is Joe on Batman? Yes, it was a Batman Earth One. Is he doing the second? Superman.
Jam.
Doing the same?
Yes. Yes, he clarified actually that that's why he had to leave Superman so suddenly. He had been doing Action Comics before the relaunch and had to leave quite suddenly. It's because Superman Earth One graphic novel came out and was a huge success, and they said they wanted to pull him off the books he was on, and so he could work exclusively on the second volume of Superman Earth One. So that's why he wasn't part of the relaunched books. So that we saw the art will be up in a few different sites, I believe, including Comicsology, and you can take a look at a couple of pages from Superman Earth One Volume Two, which comes out in the fall. And that is the other part of the news. Just gotta say, I had a great time in San Diego. It is Mecca. There's a reason why it's still the one to go to. I know that there's, you know, Paul had some comments about too commercial, too et cetera, et cetera. I gotta say that.
I don't think that Keith. We can talk about San Diego and not mention the death of the woman there. Though I don't think there's any reason to believe that San Diego itself, the Comic-Con itself, is responsible for it. And they certainly aren't. But the circus-like atmosphere that's created there, and the over-the-top fanboy nature led to this tragedy of this woman being run over by this car. So, I mean, you know, I don't think it can be completely ignored.
Certainly an unusual event. I mean, it happened, you know, the security was so heavy, the police presence was heavy, and, you know, intersections blocked off, et cetera, near the convention center during the convention. It was actually prior to the convention even starting that happened. And a bit of mixed information, but from what I've heard, it was a woman who was jaywalking.
She was in line to see the Twilight panel, needed to leave to use the washroom or something along those lines, saw the line started to move, ran across the street to get back in a panic, and was hit by a car. That's my understanding.
The Twilight panel was a day away, so.
Okay.
Twilight was on Thursday, and this happened on.
The lineup might have already been there for Twilight.
The Twilight line started on Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, it was. Actually, people tried lining up for Twilight on Monday and we turned away. So the lineup did start on Tuesday once the convention had the space because they were moving everything in, starting on Tuesday. So yeah, we don't have a lot of details on what happened other than, yeah, she did jaywalk. She did run through, like, into traffic essentially. And it is tragic.
You know, whatever it was, I mean, it is because of that crowded circus-like atmosphere, like I say. And she got caught up in that. And I'm not saying San Diego was responsible, but I am saying that just the, like I say, the craziness. I mean, at the end of the day, the willingness to put your right life at risk at any moment for something as inconsequential as hearing a panel or getting a sketch or anything like that is amazing. But I think that the herd mentality that goes on at these events can create that type of mentality. And I think that's, it's just a shame. It's just a shame to have a woman die at San Diego in such a way.
Yeah. And I actually just abandoned the idea of doing anything in Hall H or Ballroom 20, which are the two biggest spaces and generally where the TV and film things happen. I didn't go to any of those panels because you were looking at a minimum half day, and in the cases of some of those, more than a day. Like I said, Twilight was lined up 2 days in advance. Firefly was lined up at least midnight the night before. For the
2 days in advance. That's just yeah.
Well, and even on the web, you're inundated with that stuff. I was trying to find out information out of the con about comic books, about stuff I'm interested in, animation, and all I could find was the Hall H stuff. And quite frankly, although it interests me, I could get that anywhere. That's not the stuff I'd go to the con to see.
Yeah, and that was the decision I made early on. I went to one TV thing the entire weekend. And that was only because it was in the room where the JMS announcement was going to be immediately prior, and I wanted to make sure I had a good seat for that. So that is actually the only TV thing I saw was the Mockingbird Lane panel. Brian Fuller, who did Dead Like Me and Wonderfalls and a few shows like that, has a couple of new shows. So there was footage played from Mockingbird Lane, which looks really cool. It's a revamp of The Munsters with Jerry O'Connell and Eddie Izzard.
Looking forward to that one, actually.
So Jerry O'Connell's one of those guys that I want to hate, and yet I can't. I can't help but like the guy.
He's a Canadian treasure.
The guy starred in a movie with cockroaches.
He's a Canadian treasure.
There you go.
Yeah.
I know.
My secret identity is a talented guy. He's comic book old school.
That's right.
My secret identity does not count as anything. You don't say something. You don't bring up something that's absolute
shit.
Stand
by me for you.
Come on, Chris, sing it with me. You'll never guess my secret identity.
For those of you not aware, for those of you Americans, take Greatest American Hero and make a horrible Canadian version, and you have My Secret Identity.
With about an $8 budget.
Yeah.
Shot on video.
Sprinkling in a little little hobo, and that's what you get.
Yeah, awful.
So I am glad I saw that trailer. It was really cool. It was the opening scene for Mockingbird Lane, and looks like a lot of fun. But as I said, I only saw that because it was in the room that the JMS announcement was going to be in, and I wanted to make sure I had a good seat for that. So I actually turned up like an hour early. That was the earliest I went to anything. Was just that panel.
How was the panel? How many people did attend the panel for Malibu?
For Malibu, I honestly don't know. Paul would be able to tell you. I was in the front row, so I actually never looked around. I know it wasn't full. They had a pretty big room, but it was well attended, the crowd afterward was quite funny. They had to throw us out of the room because they needed to open up for the next panel, and Scott would not stop talking. He had many stories and much promotion of his of other projects. He's the guy that was the brains behind the Cowboys and Aliens project. Also still has a hand in Men in Black. So he's a player, and showed up with dueling iPhones. He had two iPhones going at the same time. And but he was he brought a box of hologram covers and said, "Come on outside. I'm going to stand in the hallway and sign and Malibu Comics here in the hallway." And so it was great. And it was really great. And you know, talking to all the guys, Tom Mason has volunteered to be on the show. And has he? Tom won't. He said he will not do it alone. So I think we get Old Rich and Tom Mason and set something up.
Awesome, awesome. I could. You know what? There was so much left on the table, even though we talked to those guys for almost a two-hour interview and really went through the history of it, of Malibu, but a lot of the little stuff. I mean, I think that's kind of what Chris was saying to us afterwards is, man, you guys, a lot of these little things that we wish we could have gotten to. So that'll be awesome to get them and talk to them some more if that's possible.
I just loved their books when they were coming back up, and now just to have a connection with these guys is so, so rewarding.
Absolutely. Any other interviews that you might have opened the door for, Keith, or are we going to save that for off the air?
Save that for off the air.
All right.
But great experience. As I said, as Chris mentioned, I met Bruce Boxleitner. Got an autographed photo and a photo with him. Very nice guy. He's launching a web series, steampunk web series called Lantern City. And I got sketches done. The Jurgens Booster Gold sketch I got done the first day I was there, and I felt I could have just gone home at that point. You know, certainly had a wonderful time the rest of the time I was there, but that was a big check mark for me.
Did he happen to mention if his wife was also in his web series? I love Melissa Gilbert.
They've been divorced for several years, so probably not.
Okay, my bad.
So probably not. It was interesting at JMS's announcement. He played a trailer for the film project he's working on, The Flickering Light, and the trailer was narrated by Bruce Boxleitner. So that was quite fun.
What else you got, Keith?
I think that about wraps it up for my convention talk. I came back with exactly my weight limit in stuff. I had a 50-pound limit on my piece of checked luggage, and it was 49 pounds. And I was happy they didn't weigh my carry-on. I split my graphic novels just exactly so. Found a lot of graphic novels, got a bunch of independent graphic novels, what I would call independent graphic novels, including Queen Crab, which I got a sketch from Jimmy Palmiotti, and Underwater Welder. With the sketch.
How awesome he is, you said, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a character that the new 52 needs to reintroduce. The Dog Welder.
I don't know who that is.
He was a Hitman side character. His power? He welded dogs to people.
I remember him now that he mentioned that. I remember him. Oh, yes.
Intriguing.
Yes, I was thinking Wild Dog, but you know what? The Dog Welder is even better. How did he take that when you told him he was awesome?
That's cute. He was very gracious. He said thank you very much for the compliment. And it was actually that I told him the Queen Crab was one of the best graphic novels that I've read in probably 5 years. I loved that book. And he said that he was very flattered by that. So, and he drew a nice sketch. It was at the Image booth. So I had a little bit more time to talk to him. And also got a sketch and a signature.
Palmiotti was at the Image booth, really?
Yes, because Creator Own Heroes is published by Image. So he was splitting time. He was doing signatures at the DC booth and at the Image booth on sketches. Okay. Yeah. The DC booth actually, both DC and Marvel actually laid it out as one-hour blocks for each person as they were signing. And DC usually had four or five at any given time that you just lined up for. Except for Jim Lee and Jeff Johns, that you had to show up in the morning and get a wristband, which is why I didn't get autographs from them. But everyone else, you just lined up, and every hour they cycled through. So it was great. I mean, it was one-stop shopping for signatures. I got a special present for Brett that I haven't told him what it is. I had to wait in line for a long time to get it, though. And it's actually the longest I waited in any line was to get Brett's present. Because he's been to San Diego a couple times, always brought me great stuff back. Tragically, Secret Agent Poyo was sold out long before I got to the Image booth. So no Poyo covers.
Now, you attended Trickster as well?
I did go over to Trickster on Saturday. And it was a little quiet when I was over there, but they had a great, great selection of independent comics. That's actually where I picked up Queen Crab. They had an exclusive cover of Creator Owned Heroes that I got signed the next day by Jimmy Palmiotti. And a couple of really wacky little books. It's all independent books, and it was all the creators just brought them by and set up. And then they had a cash register at the end. It was great for going through some independent work and seeing just different kinds of stuff.
Now, I was going to ask you, Palmiotti. Actually, you know what? Maybe we do this on a different show because this might take a while. Actually, I'm gonna shelve this one, and this is gonna come up in the near future.
Well, I know Brett doesn't like him, and it became a running joke over the couple of days because the guy I had gone to San Diego with had mentioned to me as like on the way down that he had unfollowed Palmiotti because he was tired of his shilling on Twitter, and he is Palmiotti's a big self promoter, and.
Then he shouldn't follow me on Twitter.
And then,
that's all I use it for.
Well, and then it became a running joke because we would keep seeing him places. He would mention things. He'd be directing people to different events such as Trickster, and it just became a running joke about that I was doing everything for Jimmy Palmiotti. He told me by the end of the weekend, and Dave was not paying any attention. Had stopped following him on Twitter.
I was just going to bring up actually Palmiotti and Quesada's history and what may or may not have gone up there and where the relationship is, but that'd be a long, because I mean obviously they're you know tied in together for many, many years, so, but that'd be a whole other thing, and I don't think we have time for that one. We're almost at an hour and a half and we haven't even done our Wii Views yet.
Let's move on to the Wii Views.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to mention on the news one thing that you didn't mention. Cyberverse is returning to comics, looks like a digital version for free.
Digital and print. It will be distributed through comic shops in some fashion that's a little vague right now.
Through Image and Top Cow, and for free. That's a very interesting thing. So I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
Like free, been burnt way too many times by the Cyberforce.
Well, and their Kickstarter has just started, and they're at, I think I heard 20,000 in 2 days.
Yeah, and they're going for 75, which is huge, but you know what?
But it's to pay, they want to pay for a year, I think, is the plan.
It's interesting, though. I mean, again, I like the idea. It's, I think it may be a step in the right direction, this type of thing. Using Kickstarter to do something like that and put it out and make it available for free, that's cool.
Yeah, I haven't quite figured out the print version of this, whether it will be, there's some vagueness to it, whether they'll be bought by the comic shops to distribute for free, such as the Free Comic Day stuff, which is actually 20 cents a unit or something. I'm not quite sure how it becomes free and still gets shipped to you. The digital is much simpler to do for free, but how you get a free hard copy is a bit vague to me so far.
And Brett has an excellent topic that we're going to have to bring up in the near future as well regarding San Diego digital books and print books that he was talking to me about a little bit. I told him, hey, let's not have this conversation while we're having lunch. Let's have this conversation on the show because it's interesting. So I'm looking forward to him talking about that to you guys a little bit. So let's move on now to the Wii Views because we're
saving you.
Saving
you.
Say it in stereo. Do it again.
Saving you from bad comics.
Let me start from the beginning, and we'll just edit it in. Now let's move on to the Wii Views, because we're
saving you from bad comics.
That was the worst stereo ever. One more try. We're moving on. Now let's move on to Wii Views, because we're
saving you from bad comics.
Here I come to save the day.
Still shitty stereo, but that's our third try. We're not going to do it again.
Can we do it as a round? That that I'll do the saving you, and then he does saving you while I'm doing back, and you know, like row, 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 vote.
Yeah, let's say we did.
Okay.
Like I said, it's our third time. We're not going to do it again. That was a good effort. Maybe I'll just let you two do it in the future by yourself. Chris, why don't you say the first part, and Keith, you say the second part, and I'll just cut myself out.
I don't know the first part.
It's so complicated.
Line.
Okay, I'm not sure if this will get edited out or not because it is gold in a blooper section. But let's either way talk about our Wii views. We're doing the Wii views this our reviews for this week. We Talk Comics Wii views. Brett came up with that name, and it's lame. And yet, the more I say it, the more I love it. So, anyways, let's go on. I know Chris has always hated it, so it sounds cheesy, but it makes me happy. That's all that really counts. Keith, why don't you open up with our first book of the week?
Well, let's start right off with probably the biggest number one of the week, Captain Marvel from Marvel. And this is the setup of Carol Danvers, who had been Miss Marvel, who had been probably 10 other characters over the years. And this is Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Dexter Soy. And I really like this book. I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a good setup to the character. Paid some tribute to what had come before. Actually had a bit of play with why she's taking on this name, why the name change is happening, and sets up what her new look, where this character is going to be going. And, you know, and this is a big deal launch of a new female solo book at Marvel. It's the first one since the cancellation of X-23. So I really liked it. I'm definitely in for the second issue.
You know what? I was surprised by this book. The art change is about, what, page three? It's not certainly what I expected based on the cover and such. I'm not sure if I liked the art or not. I thought the dialogue and the story and the pacing actually were all really, really well done. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. Characterization was good. It wasn't that overly clever stuff that I complained about with her appearance in Avenging Spider-Man the week before. I think this was a much, much more palatable for me, not so self-reverent and self-aware. I did think it was good. I had a couple of nitpicks, and there's reasons why I won't keep going on. Number one is just a personal thing that this is now Captain Marvel. DC doesn't have a Captain Marvel anymore. Shazam. DC's Captain Marvel was for years Earth's Mightiest Mortal. So now this Captain Marvel over at Marvel is Earth's Mightiest Hero. And I don't know why, but probably because I'm such a big Shazam fan, that kind of just bugged me. Okay, but that's a personal nitpick. And you know what? I know my nitpicks. I can get a cream for those and get rid of those. That's not a problem. But here's my other thing. It's a number one, and I know that a reboot is coming. And it just feels inconsequential. And I don't know where its place is or what its place or will be. This book feels inconsequential. You say it's a big book because it's the first female character running a character or running a series since X-23. But yeah, I mean that's my problem with it. This feels unimportant to me, and it feels unimportant both with just what's happening in the book doesn't seem very important to me, and also what's just kind of what's happening in Marvel. It seems like an odd time to launch anything right now. So I don't know. That's kind of just that was my problems with it. But it's a fairly well done book. I did enjoy reading it. Chris, what do you think?
Well, just to correct you a little bit here, Marvel now is not the entire line. So
I know it isn't. Which is, again, part of the thing that bugs me.
Captain Marvel could have a long run. I'm cheering for it. I thoroughly enjoyed the art. Your little nitpick there was quite insane. But, yeah, no, art, story. I had none of the problems I had with the Avenging Spider-Man first appearance last week. That made no sense to me whatsoever. This is where we should have been introduced to her as the new Captain Marvel. I'm a huge fan of Miss Marvel. I collected her regular series. Unfortunately, I sort of got turned off when she started with the Mighty Avengers. But, yeah. This is definitely where that series was heading. I'm glad she finally took the mantle, And a number one, thoroughly enjoyed this Marvel book.
Like I say, I do think that she's a more, I'd agree, she's a more likable character here than she was as Warbird. I don't know why, she's more likable.
I'd have to agree that Avenging Spider-Man was a very poor choice to get that, to put that out before, before Captain Marvel's own book came out, because it is quite out of place. I was very happy that, like, even though I had read the Secret Avengers issues that led into this run, I was really happy reading it that you didn't have to have read those. The number one worked well on its own. And it just had an extra layer if you had read the Secret Avengers run.
Chris, go ahead with your next one.
Okay. I picked this one because Mo seems to have this running thing with Matt Fraction. And I kind of wanted to introduce him to a less frivolous Matt Fraction than we've seen in some of the books we've reviewed on this show. So I picked the beginning of a new story arc on Iron Man 521. And this was an interesting book. Probably not the best starting point, but I didn't have a huge problem following the story. I thought it was a serviceable story. I know right now Mo is going to pick up on Pepper Potts actually having a Iron Man costume. But you know what, Mo? Things move along. Some storylines move along. You have to take some of that. It was introduced a long time ago. You have to let that go.
I don't care about that, Chris. I wasn't even going to mention that. That didn't even come up to me. It wasn't even a point to me. The book is shit. That's the point.
It's not shit. It's good
read. It is absolute, utter shit.
Keith, come in on my side and put Mo in his place, please.
Oh, I hated this book.
Oh,
I absolutely.
Oh, you let me down.
I had no idea what was going on.
No, this book introduces. This is not even. It's not that the dialogue is bad or the characterizations are bad. Matt Fraction, the editor, failed him here, Chris. This book introduces 100 billion characters in 100 billion settings with no context, and is just utter shit from beginning to end. And Salvador LaRoche, or however you pronounce it, I've been watching his art since the early 90s and always enjoyed it, but the eyes of his characters here have this odd, freaky, almost glowing thing that just scares the hell out of me. But this book is one of the worst books ever. Shit.
Tony Stark in prison. I liked it.
Okay, Tony Stark in prison. It doesn't even say prison, and I'm not even sure it's a prison. He's held somewhere, but I don't think it's a prison. And who are those other guys? And what's his relationship to them? And how many times does he seem to be in prison and then not? It jumps around, Chris. It's utter shit.
He's actually in Mandarin City.
Yes.
But I thought it was a prison, too. It does seem to be prison, and then the Mandarin turns up. So, I couldn't follow it. I just couldn't follow what was going on. And actually, I didn't know that was Pepper Potts. I know that it is like, you know, flipping back through, I see that it's said in one panel. But, I just couldn't follow it.
I'll take the blame on this one. I thought being the start of a new storyline, maybe I could get you guys into it. But I failed.
It's the tough thing about...
No, you didn't fail, Chris. The book fails.
I think it's
a book, like I say, and Keith, you say you didn't understand it. I'm sure you'll agree. When I say it introduces 100,000 characters in 100,000 settings without any context or explanation, would you disagree with that?
No.
Fail.
I think perhaps you need to read more than one issue, but...
No, you don't. That's the whole point. You don't. Especially if it's a jump-on point for a new story arc. But even then, you shouldn't ever sit there I'm not saying that you need to spoon feed people, but let me tell you something. If you pick up an issue of a random issue, say issue 173 of Frank Miller's run in the middle of the Elektra storyline of Daredevil, you will completely understand what has happened before and what's coming after and still be able to get that book. That's well-written comics. This is.
I think it's unfair to compare Frank Miller to Matt Fraction.
I don't, because I've read some Matt Frank Miller. That's utter shit. So was this.
So from the what happened before thing at the beginning of the book, it says, welcome to the future. Does this story take place in the future, or is it current continuity? You know, Chris?
Actually, I don't.
Yeah, exactly.
We had a bad run with an artist for a while. I dropped the book. I am familiar with some of the characters going on, but I haven't actually collected the Iron Man in about 2 years. So
it's always the difficulty when there's a giant event going on is, you know, the books that aren't tying the event. I mean, we always complain about too many books in an event, but when you've got a book like this or like, you know, Brian Wood's X-Men that isn't tying in, You kind of need a place to stand of whether it's all taking place before the event or after the event.
I don't really know
with this book.
And let's go with this, Chris. Okay, let's not talk about compare Frank Miller. Let's talk about Jeff Parker's Incredible or the Red Hulk issue number 50. Where I had not read nothing before or after. I jumped in. I knew what was going on. I understood the past. I understood the future. Understood the characters. Understood the settings. Really enjoyed it. Compare that to this. This is shit. This is, like I say, this is perhaps sometimes the writer has too much freedom.
All right, let's go to the next one.
Yes.
Yeah, your turn, Keith.
My turn already? I thought it was your turn.
Yeah.
Why isn't
no,
it your
it's
turn?
Your turn.
Stupid snake
it's
format
a, it's
that
a,
I never
understood. Snake format here.
I don't know what snake format means.
Yes.
I honestly have no idea.
Because you start part one and one.
Every time I think I understand it, it's a different person with the next one. Oh, okay, snake format.
Let me explain snake format to you, Keith. We go in the order that we are situated on Moe's computer screen, not ours.
Actually, we're not going in the order that we're situated on Moe's computer screen. But it doesn't really matter. It's Keith, then me, then Chris, then me, then Keith.
Yeah, but you didn't go second. Chris went second.
Actually, no, I went second.
No, I did Captain Marvel and he did Iron Man. We haven't done a third.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. When we're reviewing the book, Spider-Man, or we're reviewing Captain Marvel, you're an idiot.
We're reviewing
Captain Marvel, you talked about it first, I talked about it second. I never introduce a book because I'm in the middle. The guys at the end of the snake format are introducing. Keith, it's your turn!
I absolutely still
don't. Keith, I just wait for Mo to point at me. That's really the only way to do it.
All right. Next episode, episode 43, snake format. All right, I'm gonna go with the Star Trek ongoing series number 11, which is part one of the next arc. They've been doing generally two-issue arcs on the series, and I just want to backtrack the concept of the Star Trek ongoing series. It is written by Mike Johnson, also co-writer on Supergirl. And what they're doing is they're retelling episodes of the original Star Trek series using the characters in the recently rebooted Star Trek film. The recently rebooted Star Trek film basically establishes that they wiped out the previous continuity of the original Star Trek TV show. This book is retelling them. Issue 11 starts the Tribbles story. I quite enjoyed this. I kind of dug it. It was interesting to get a different take, you know, to see, you know, Chris Pine and the other guys' faces in the story. They took a radically different take with the Tribbles story than they had in the original. And this book's almost like a what if. You know, I love that they're kind of playing with all these old stories. It's actually inspired me to go back and rewatch these old episodes, so that I can watch the episode and then see the redo and then read the redo right after. So I like this. And I'd only read the first issue so far, but I'm going to go back and get the first trade.
You know what? And is the snake format goes to me next. So here we go. I you know what? Keith, I totally agree with you. Like, the Star Trek movie I expected to hate and then loved. And once I got what they did, I really appreciated it. And then, you know, I got this, and I didn't know that this is what they were doing either. It took me a little while to get it, and once I got it, I went, oh, this is cool. This is, I mean, and the I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the guy who wrote the script for the Tribbles in the first place seemed to have given his A-OK with this take on the Tribbles, from what I can tell, from a little bit, a little foreword written by him. This is almost, like you say, it's a retelling of the Tribbles. It's almost like this is, what if, like you say, what if they didn't have to worry about budget constraints and all that type of stuff and had a better continuity of the universe to go into, what would the Tribbles storyline have been? And this is theoretically what it could have been. I also really enjoy this great jumping on point. I mean, when this was first suggested, I was like, why the hell were you going to read Star Trek? And then I went, Tribbles. Well, who the hell doesn't love Tribbles? And so I went, God, I hope this is okay. I went, jumped in, and I really enjoyed it as well.
Tribbles. They had me sort of at Tribbles. That's why I suggested it. We've always talked we should do more property books. And I was not actually expecting to love it, but I love Tribbles, so I thought at least I got that. And I got that and a good comic book. That's all one can ask for.
And Tribbles on the first page.
Yes, Tribbles on the first page.
No Tribbles on the last page for this book. Tribbles on the first page.
No, first page.
That's true. That's true. Even in the introduction, the TV show, the Tribbles weren't on the first in the first page. Well, I guess it isn't a page. First screen, whatever the hell you'd call it. First scene. You know, we had to wait for our Tribbles, but not here because everybody knows the Tribbles and everybody loves the Tribbles, whatever trouble there are. Chris.
No. Next Mo, book. Why don't you introduce a book?
No, because it's the snake format. I'm not introducing a book.
Oh, we introduce a book.
Keith, introduce another book.
I'm introducing armadillo format next week. All right.
What the hell is that?
I don't know. I don't know what snake format is. why should I explain my format?
But at least the snake format actually exists, even if you don't understand it. Armadillo format is just something made up.
Because snake format's probably in the Bible. Okay, Danger Girl G.I. Joe number one. What utter nonsense. what a cobbled together, like, oh, I did not enjoy this book. It doesn't work unless you like only two characters out of G.I. Joe, and it doesn't work unless you really know Danger Girl. Because otherwise the name of, I mean, I read that Danger Girl number one a couple of weeks ago, so I actually recognized the name of the character that gets introduced halfway through, but I don't know why you're supposed to have known him. I'm guessing this is really for Danger Girl fans, less for G.I. Joe fans. But it's two worlds that don't really work for me. It's, you know, G.I. Joe, even at its funnest, was always a little more kind of realistic edged. You know, even with the Hiss tanks and Serpentor, it still had a bit of kind of real world-ish vibe to it. Danger Girl is totally not that. Very cartoony action in Danger Girl. So I didn't think the two fit together very well, and I will not be interested in the rest of them.
You know, it's tough to top a review like What Utter Nonsense, especially when it is What Utter Nonsense. You know, this is interesting because, you know, you're used to, let's just take Star Trek as an example because we were just talking about that. When they did a Star Trek and X-Men crossover, you have the Star Trek world, you have the X-Men world, you establish them individually, and then they bring them together. This is almost like these guys were always inhabiting the same universe. It's a different take in that way. It's like Danger Girl and G.I. Joe were always part of the same universe, so we're supposed to kind of understand that from the beginning. But this is it's just a lazy effort. The writing is lazy. The characterization is lazy. And good Lord, is the art lazy. It feels like a money grab, the laziest effort you can imagine. Chris, what did you think?
I have to agree with you guys. The art style, I'll actually say I didn't hate the art style. But it didn't make any sense for G.I. Joe. Way too cartoony. And that's weird saying that about G.I. Joe. But yes, there is no... The G.I. Joes that were in it, and there aren't a lot, I didn't recognize. and I know my G.I. Joe. I've never been a huge fan of Danger Girl, so I didn't get any of the Danger Girl references. They really should have called this Danger Girl co-starring, or Danger Girl gets a visit from G.I. Joe. It didn't work. It really didn't. Perhaps a Danger Girl fan might get something out of this. I'm not that person. Yeah, don't buy it. It's crap.
Wow, we agreed on two books in a row. That might be a record.
That really might be. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's getting boring. So let's bring out another book and see if we agree on it. Chris, what have you got? No, wait. It's Keith's turn in the snake format because Chris forfeited his.
All right. Our final book of the week, Carbon Gray, Volume 2, Number 1. This was a book published by Image, funded through Kickstarter. And I really, really like the art of this book. But it's a problem I have with Brereton at times. It's a painted art style, probably digital paint. But the word balloons really look pasted on. And it makes me so aware that I'm reading word balloons in a way that regular comic art doesn't look like that. Because it really feels like they're sitting on top of something, not as part of the plan. I couldn't really follow the story through most of it. I don't know if there was more from volume one that I needed. There's a character that turns up about two pages from the end that I flipped back and couldn't find them anywhere earlier in the story. So I wasn't sure who it was and why I was supposed to care about what happens in the final pages. Very, very confused, for a book that is going to be an introduction to a lot of people to these characters, because of the extra attention of the Kickstarter, I have no idea what was going on. And not that intrigued to go back either, because the story just didn't grab me in any way.
You know, it's I'm glad to see a book like this published through Image because of Kickstarter, but I felt like I was plodding through. And you know what? If I wasn't reviewing this book, I would have given up much earlier. In the end, I still gave up because it's just so wordy. And the art is nice, and it's well done. It's a well-done book, but it's so slow and so boring, and it just did not grab me at all. I just couldn't make it through it. I just felt like I was plodding through mud, basically. Chris?
Yeah, it's interesting, Keith, that you mentioned the word balloons, because I was reading this book thinking, what the hell is up with the word balloons? And I couldn't put my finger on it, but you got that right. They all seemed perfectly round and plotted, put into the pictures almost at random. In addition, we have several word balloons that are black with white writing. Personally, I always hate that as a technique. I find it difficult to read. Beyond that, the story, very confusing. I did enjoy the art, definitely, probably more than you guys, but at the end of it, it was, I'm not reading issue two, so fail. I'm done.
The art was nice. I mean, I don't think there was any problem with the art. Or that was good, but
I don't think lent itself to make the story more understandable, though.
No, I agree. I definitely agree with that.
It was beautiful poster art, but I don't think with a story this involved, that complex art like that, lent itself to, didn't help this book despite being beautiful.
You know, it's a shame because this is a book where I can feel the passion and love and talent and creativity and effort, all this from the creators. So it's too bad that it just didn't work. Chris, let's go out with our plugs.
All right. I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com. Chris _ WeTalk on Twitter. I promised you last week a new blog We Talk Movies. I have failed, but I am putting this back on our listeners. Yes, I am putting this back on our listeners because, true, you guys came through. I'm getting my crap from Trailers from Hell. Great. However, you guys failed. Nowadays, their Indiegogo campaign did not reach its goal. You guys, 50%. That's like a C. You have to do better at getting me my crap, and I'll get you your crap.
50% is D.
Is it? I was never that good at math.
I guess it depends on the school. All right, well, I am CoverPorterK on Twitter. You can email me at keith@wetalkpodcast.com. And I will say a great episode last week by the guys. While I was off at San Diego, they managed to put an episode together. I will say, Chris, Marvel tried legacy renumbering. It didn't work. They did it on like 8 books, and it didn't make a change in the sales.
Yes, I thought it was poorly publicized. I thought they could try again.
Turns out a 601 and a number 47 don't sell any different. 600 sells better than 46, but 601, no. So there was actually a great site I came across when I was doing my article on renumbering or on variations of numbers for Comicosity. And that was one of the ones that I came across. They had to do some clever adding with Wonder Woman, for example, to add together 4 different volumes to get them to issue 600. Amazing Spider-Man has some numbering like that too. There's a couple of those that they cobbled together several different runs so that they could get closer to one of the big landmark issues. I imagine that we've always expected that Action in a couple of years will revert to legacy numbering so that they can get to issue 800 or issue 1,000.
They will. Come on, it'd be stupid not to. Stupid not to. Hey, Keith, just real quickly, did you read Space Punisher?
I did read Space Punisher.
And?
I thought it was quite a fun Elseworlds book. Or not Elseworlds, but like a what-if kind of thing.
3-1.
Out of continuity.
3-1. 3-1.
I hate you guys. I'm going home.
3 strikes, you're out, asshole. There's my 5th one for the show.
I hated
that.
Met
my quota. No F-bombs this week. I did good. Anyways, I'm Mo at We Talk Podcast. M-O. No E in my name. So it's Mo at WeTalkPodcast.com or Mo_WeTalk. And you can contact me if you want to do any guest blogs or podcasting. We're accepting that. We have lots of good stuff coming up. You guys have no idea. It's too bad about Chris's your failure to back his book that he wanted the nowadays. But yeah. You know what? It's okay. He's still gonna do some sort of blog, I'm sure, someday. As soon as he stops being mad at you guys.
Oh yes.
Comic Podcast Network. We're a member of them as well, so you can definitely check out more comic podcasts over there. And check out Stash My Comics. You'll want to check that out as well because that has some really interesting, cool stuff. And they're going to web design going on over there, redesign. And, of course, you can also read Longbox Graveyard. We talked about his podcast here, and he has his blog. But he also does some blogging over at over there on Stash My Comics. So you definitely, if you're a fan of Paul O'Connor, a.k.a. Longbox Graveyard, and his blog and his own site, which is extremely popular, or his podcast, which is doing really well for us, check that out. What else we got? Oh, boy, man, we got some more shows and stuff like that coming up. We're going to have another Mojo. It's going to be coming up soon. We'll talk to Tyler James as well on that one. So Keith, I think, is going to jump in and crash the party as well on that one. So that should be a lot of fun. Guys, we're having a great time over here. We hope everybody else is too. So you know what? If you could just do us one little favor and take a couple seconds, hit that share button, a social media share button, Google+, StumbleUpon, whatever it is you use, read it. We really appreciate that. And our missing co-host here, Brett, Brett, _WeTalk, Brett at WeTalk Podcasts. Send him an email. He's really the guy who's got the most power in this whole thing anyways, guys. So, you know, if you want to know some stuff or get some stuff done, he's a great guy to contact. So I think that's it. Anything else, guys?
No, I mean, certainly, you'll know from this episode, Brett is the lipstick on a pig. He's the gloss.
Absolutely.
Any rough edges? That's because we didn't have Brett.
That's true. And it's not fair for you to call Chris a pig. Anyways, what will you
I just want to throw out, also, if you're downloading us from iTunes, write us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Good or bad.
That's true. True. Good or bad. Well, you can write good about me and bad about the other two.
Can you give us 4 stars and then write something bad? That's okay.
Trying to get out of here. O-U-T.